Hi, I'm Dave Bushong, KZ10, and this is 99hobbies.com. Okay, I'm here at the convention with Barry Baines, WD4ASW with AMSET. Hi, Barry.
Hi, good afternoon.
I'm glad you could join me. I want to hear all about AMSET. Tell me some of the projects you guys have going. I want to know how people can get involved with AMSAT if they're interested in satellites. Tell me everything.
Okay, well, give me a little bit of background on AMSAT. Okay. AMSAT was started in 1969, so we've been in business, so to speak, for over 35 years. And it was started in 1969 as a continuation of some of the amateur satellite work that was started by a company or an organization called Project OSCAR. OSCAR was the acronym that was selected. It stands for Orbiting Satellite Carrying Amateur Radio. And it was Project OSCAR back in 1961 that launched the first satellite called OSCAR 1. And OSCAR 1 was kind of unique because it was the first demonstration of being able to send two payloads into space at the same time off the same launch vehicle. So they were the secondary payload of a launch from Vandenberg Air Force Base, and so they made history just by the fact that they were the second payload to be released from a spacecraft. But they had also had a battery. It was powered by battery. It had a transmitter sending CW, and the CW that was being sent was telemetry that gave parameters on the spacecraft itself. So it could figure out from the CW being sent and the speed of that CW, what was the temperature of the spacecraft and what was the voltage that was available on the spacecraft. So that was the first step for launching amateur satellites into orbit. And if you think about it, it was pretty phenomenal. I mean, Sputnik was launched in 1957 or whatever it was, and just a few short years later, amateur radio was in space as well.
Wow.
By 1969, when AMSAT was created, which was based out of D.C., they were working on the fifth amateur satellite. And that, in fact, was built by some Australian hams, and they were looking for some support from the United States. So AMSAT got created to help get that satellite completed and launched, and it was successfully placed in orbit. Since that time, there have been amateur satellites built, not just by AMSAT North America, but by other AMSAT organizations as well, principally by AMSAT Germany and AMSAT Japan. And so there's been now a total of 52 amateur satellites placed successfully in orbit. So, the last one is called the VO-52, 52 meaning the 52nd amateur radio satellite. This does not include the Russian satellites that were launched during the Cold War. They had their own designations, and they were not included in that count. We are an organization of about 3,000 people. Our primary focus is to design, build, launch, and operate satellites in orbit. Our focus right now is building high Earth orbit satellites, that is, satellites that have a very high apogee, going out to 40,000 kilometers or more from Earth. And that distance gives you the wide footprint so that you can talk to amateurs on other continents. So one day, if you're in the eastern United States, you can talk to Japan. The next day, you can talk to Europe.
And so some of the low Earth orbits, is it just that they have a smaller footprint, or is it the amount of time that you have on the bird?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah, there is a time and distance correlation. The low Earth orbit satellites are over your area, if you will, for a relatively short period of time, typically 15 minutes or less. The high Earth orbit satellites can be up 8 to 12 hours, so there's a significant difference there. The second difference is what you sort of alluded to, which is, yes, the lower the orbit, the smaller the footprint. So whereas a high Earth orbit satellite, you could potentially work across to Europe, typically with a low Earth orbit satellite, you'll typically work across the United States. Okay. And so depending upon, if it comes down right down the middle of the country, the East Coast and see the West Coast. But with high Earth orbit satellites, the West Coast would see Europe, the East Coast would see Europe. It's a much bigger footprint as a result.
Now, with the higher satellites, do you need more of a station, say more power, more antennas and so forth to get to it? Is it that kind of a difference?
Well, that's a good question, because one of the things that historically has happened in the past is that, yes, with using 2 meters and 435 megahertz, typically you had to have a pretty large array to be able to access a satellite. Because if it's out there at 40,000 kilometers, it's a pretty weak signal by the time you get out to that distance, and yeah, you've got to have pretty good coverage. But things have changed in the last 35 years. The technology has certainly changed, but also the environment in which we live has changed. 35 years ago, it was not that unusual for people to have large antennas. In today's world, where people are living in townhouses or in apartments or condominiums, and they have, or they live in a subdivision that's got deed restrictions, people cannot put up large antennas anymore.
Right.
So the next site that we're building is called Eagle. And one of the goals that we have of building Eagle, which will be a high Earth orbit satellite, is to put the technology in so people can do it from a balcony. It will be like a suitcase size device that basically is got the antenna and the transmitter receiver and all that that you need, using microwave bands and digital transmission modes instead of analog transmission modes, to be able to basically work the satellite with a much smaller suitcase. And we're doing that not only because of the change in the environment that hams are facing in terms of deed restrictions, but if you think about what would have been the wonderful opportunity to have a satellite overhead during times of emergency. If you think about the tsunami in 2004 or Hurricane Katrina in 2005, you know, Katrina had a disaster footprint of over 90,000 square miles. You know, and so if you think about, that's a large area to try to get people in and communicate from. With a satellite, anybody could have gotten into a satellite in that 90,000 square mile area if we had the appropriate technology available to do it. So Eagle's being designed to give us the traditional, what we call Mode B, the 2 meters, 70 centimeter combination that previous generations of satellites in high Earth orbit have had, but also go into some of the digital technology to give us the ability to work with, you know, a small dish, suitcase size type of situation that a ham in an apartment can work the satellite by basically facing in the general direction of the satellite and let the electronics figure out the Doppler shift and the adjustments that's got to be made to be able to work the satellite.
Well, that's interesting because you mentioned before about deed restrictions and things like that. Right. There are some situations where that might be the only way that somebody can get on the air.
Well, that's true. And, of course, it's right now with the way that the band conditions are, HF is not real exciting right now. One way for guys to work DX is through a satellite. And so you get away from the ionospheric changes that occur, the sunset cycle, and all of that, and you work a satellite, which, of course, counts toward DXCC. So it offers that opportunity as well. So, yeah, you get away from the deed restrictions, and you get away from some of the natural phenomena of sunspots and the like that impact your ability to work DX.
And you probably don't really have to worry about interfering with people's TV sets and things on those frequencies, right?
Well, that's part of the analysis that we're doing right now, is trying to figure out what are the appropriate bands to use. We have an idea in terms of the technology that's required, but there are some regulatory issues. For example, the 2.4 gigahertz band, which we have used with AL40, which is no longer in service. Well, since that satellite was launched in 2000, what has happened to the 2.4 gigahertz band? All the Wi-Fi ports and subpart 15 stuff that's been installed, etc. So we are concerned about making sure that when we select the appropriate bands, that we recognize the fact that there are other situations happening that may impact the use of that band. And we also have to recognize the fact that the use of these bands are changing from a commercial and governmental perspective as well. And so you have, for example, the Japanese and the Europeans developing GPS systems that will be placed in orbit in a few years. Those are going to be in the 1.2 gigahertz range, which is exactly where L-band is. So, you know, we're thinking to ourselves, well, we really can't be dependent upon L-band, because once those things are operational, even though we were there first, the government's going to say, these guys are more important than you are, and, you know, you can't use the band. So, yeah, we're looking at really a 2.4 gigahertz uplink, not a downlink, and a 3 gigahertz, which is really a 3 gigahertz S-band uplink, and then a 5 gigahertz downlink as being one of the combinations we're going to place on Eagle.
Okay. So if people want to find out more about AMSAT, what's your website?
The website is www.amsat.org. So it's www.amsat.org. And on that website, you'll see a plethora of information talking about not only the history of AMSAT, but the status of the various satellites that are available now, give operating advice to how to work the satellites. You can order from AMSAT some of the publications we produce to help people get started. Software is available for people who want to install tracking software, for example, on their machines. There's even an online web-based predictor engine, so that you don't even have to have a software package on your machine. You can go ahead and put in your grid square or your latitude and longitude, pick the satellite you want to know when's going to be overhead, and it'll print out for you a prediction as to when that satellite will be available. Give you the start and stop time that the satellite will be in view and what the azimuth and elevations will be during the course of that pass. So that can be done online using Pass Predictor.
That's great. Well, Barry Baines, WD4ASW with AMSAT, thanks for being on 99 Hobbies.
I appreciate that. Have a good day.
So long.